Alfredo Garcia. Maybe you could help us find him.
Well, don't worry. If he's alive, I'll find him. Well, alive isn't our problem. How about dead or alive? How about that?
Dead. Just dead.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's bonus review of Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
I do recognize the name.
Oh, you know the name Garcia?
Sure. It's like Jones or Smith.
A patron-exclusive review, chosen by Sean Ray.
I want to make you so happy tonight.
Hosted by Arnie.
He was like a son to me.
Jacob.
Well, you see, he's a friend of a friend.
And Stuart.
You've worked around here quite a while.
This episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
You don't want me to be part of that.
You are a part of it.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Come on, Arnie. Get on the roof.
Today we're discussing Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, starring Warren Oates, Isela Vega, directed by Sam Peckinpah. I bet you guys didn't expect to see me so soon, huh? This is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing.
And Stuart.
And this is Jacob, the co-host who never wants to be drunk in Fresno, California. Or sober. It's Fresno. I don't want to be there.
Poor Fresno.
Well, I'm glad to be here for our patrons in June of 2024. If you told me we'd still be podcasting in 2024, I wouldn't have believed it when we started in 2007. And it's only because of supporters like those listening to this podcast that we're able to, and supporters like Sean Ray, who picked this movie for our review.
Sean Ray has picked a lot of our patron picks. He's a big supporter of us. He picked, if you remember a few years ago, Dragged Across Concrete. He is a big fan of that director, S. Craig Zahler. And part of why he chose to do this movie is Zahler's favorite director is Sam Peckinpah. And so he's been trying to watch all those films and came to this one and called it his favorite of all the Peckinpah. Now, we, of course, have done some Peckinpah. We did Straw Dogs as part of a home invasion series. So we know Peckinpah here as well. But for this one, what he cites is his love of both the dark comedy. I think that he sees a lot of irony in the things that happen here, and yet he also compliments that it's not a midnight movie zaniness, that there is also some real dramatic pathos that sneaks up on you as well. So I think he's complimenting Peckinpah's gift at both making something brutal and dramatic, while also maybe, I don't know if he did say, I think he says here in the notes that he did laugh at some things, although dark, dark humor, folks. Black as midnight.
Yes.
But what do you guys think? I mean, as I said, we've covered at least one Sam Peckinpah. Do you know his career by name?
Yeah, I know who he is. I mean, I've seen The Wild Bunch, which is probably his, with Straw Dogs, his other big film, probably the biggest one. I know he did a lot of Westerns, but when I looked at the films of his I've seen, Wild Bunch was the only Western. Straw Dogs, we've talked about. There's a Steve McQueen one called The Getaway, which apparently I seen it. I gave it 3.5 stars. I don't remember it at all. And the one other one of his I've seen, which is probably another outlier, a James Caan film called The Killer Elite, where he fights ninjas. Sam Peckinpah did a ninja film.
And I know Peckinpah by name. When I hear the name, I think of Westerns, but the only film I've seen of his is Straw Dogs.
He's got a very varied career. It's worth pointing out, a lot of times we try to follow directors' careers and see themes and patterns. I think the theme is extreme, right? And he walked the walk. I think what people appreciate about Sam Peckinpah are the stories that come off of his sets. It will probably not surprise you to find out that the character in the movie we're here to talk about is largely autobiographical, and that Sam Peckinpah acted a lot on set like Benny does in this movie, which is to say womanizing, screaming, drunk, kind of delusional.
That is my impression of Peckinpah.
Yes. At this point, where he's at in his career is he's had his biggest hits by this point and has sworn off Hollywood, has sworn off America. He's really mad that we reelected Nixon, and I think you see a little bit of that here. And he was really mad that Hollywood doesn't want him to make the movies he wanted to. So he had moved to Mexico and was just going to use an entirely Mexican crew to compete. He felt like he could be an independent filmmaker and do his own thing. And I will just say, without getting into the gritty details, a few years after this, a lot of people that were longtime collaborators with him walked away from the set, did not work with him again after this movie, and he was charged with crimes and had to leave Mexico. So I don't think that it was the vision of artistic freedom that he had hoped when he started this project. And again, look at this movie. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of hope, a lot of creative birth happening on here. Death is, I think, the vibe I get strongest. This was intended to be a film starring Peter Falk, if you can imagine Columbo in the role.
I cannot.
James Coburn was also approached. I can't imagine a lot of people wanted to do this. Steve McQueen is not returning his phone call after The Getaway. But yeah, I think Warren Oates is a character actor that had been in many of the Westerns that Sam Peckinpah is known for, including The Wild Bunch. And it was kind of like, well, I need somebody and I trust you. But to hear anyone describe it, Warren Oates is doing a spot-on impersonation of the director in this film. And his mannerisms and his body language and his excessive drinking and tearing blouses of women and exposing their breasts, all of this behavior is very well known to be a Peckinpah trait. And we are celebrating the 50th anniversary. This movie came out right around now, July, summer, because of course it feels like a summer movie. You're done with Jaws. Why don't you go see Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia? Probably not a shocker to find out that this movie was very unsuccessful in its initial theatrical release. It made no money. Critics hated it. They called it Peckinpah's worst film.
Did people know what they were getting? Because when you told me we're watching this movie, I'm like, okay, this is what, some Western, like takes place in Texas when we're fighting over it with Mexico or something? Like, that was my assumption. Peckinpah, okay, we're going to be watching a Western. That is not what this is at all, but I wonder if crowds knew what they were getting.
Yeah, audiences, I can't even speak to what, again, the title to me, if you said you're going to watch a movie that's about a severed head, bringing me the head of someone, I would definitely think that it was a spatter film, bloody exploitation, going to have a lot of drive-in movie elements, is what I'm imagining in my head.
What's funny is when I heard this title, I'd never heard of this film before Sean Ray emailed us and picked it. And my immediate thought is, oh, this is going to be a period piece, historical epic. Alfredo Garcia, probably the head of some Central American country. It's going to be 3 hours long. That's what my expectation was for Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
You thought you were going to learn something.
Not really Sam Peckinpah's forte. I don't know that he did do any of that. I mean, he certainly has done period pictures, but I don't believe that, important Oscar bait political dramas, not what I would expect from him. But interestingly enough, we mentioned Straw Dogs. That movie tanked in England. They were very insulted that some Yank had come over there and depicted their culture to be so brutal. But they actually loved this movie. It was like the only place that played. I guess they have no problem with portraying Americans and Mexicans in the brutish ways that they were portrayed in Straw Dogs. Its reputation was somewhat restored by an international release. And then over time, I do believe this movie has garnered something of a cult reevaluation. I hear things like, we have movies like No Country for Old Men and some of these neo-westerns that are at least set in the West and have some dark humor to them and drama to them that are kind of hard to categorize in terms of genre. Movies like that owe a debt to what Sam Peckinpah did in 1974.
I was definitely thinking about No Country for Old Men while I was watching this. So yeah, I see some similarities and some influences there.
Well, why don't we see what we get? Arnie, tell us what happens to the head of Alfredo Garcia.
Teenaged Teresa is pregnant. Her father, crime lord El Jefe, demands to know the father. After torturing his daughter, including breaking her arm, Teresa admits the father is Alfredo Garcia. El Jefe puts a $1 million bounty on Alfredo Garcia's head. A couple of El Jefe's goons, Sapinsley and Quill, start asking around about Alfredo Garcia's whereabouts. One man, Benny, knows the answer. Garcia was spending time with Benny's girlfriend, Elita. Benny shakes down Elita for Garcia's location, only to find out Garcia is already dead. He died in a car accident. Benny goes to Sappinsley and Quill, who offer Benny $10,000 if he brings them Garcia's head. So Benny and Elita go on a road trip to find Garcia's grave. Along the way, Benny proposes to Elita. On the road, the couple are harassed by two bikers who want to rape Elita and kill Benny. Elita agrees to screw them if they spare Benny's life, but Benny gets one of their guns and kills both bikers. Benny and Elita get to the town where Garcia is buried. In the night, Benny digs up Garcia's grave, but after the hard work of the digging is done, Benny is attacked and knocked unconscious. Benny and Elita didn't realize that during their whole road trip, they were followed by two men who also want Garcia's head. When Benny awakens, he finds Elita is dead, and Garcia's head is missing. Benny finds out from the locals that the men who attacked him are driving a station wagon. He catches up to the two men, kills them, and takes Garcia's head. Garcia's family attacks Benny and takes the head back, but just as it seems they're about to execute Benny, Sappinsley and Quill arrive and gun down the Garcia family. But the Garcias kill Quill in the gunfight. Sappinsley then goes to kill Benny, but Benny shoots first. Benny reclaims Garcia's head and goes to the headquarters where he had previously gotten his mission from Sappinsley and Quill. The man there is prepared to give Benny the promised $10,000, but Benny demands to know why they wanted Garcia's head. He then kills all the men and personally takes Garcia's head to El Jefe. El Jefe is happy to get proof of Garcia's death and gives Benny the promised $1,000,000, but Benny is on a mission of vengeance. He shoots and kills El Jefe, but while trying to escape, Benny is shot and killed by El Jefe's men as credits roll.
And as they start, I do think Sam Peckinpah, maybe it's just the Wild Bunch, but you know, he did go all the way back to TV westerns. His career did start in that genre. I am fooled into thinking we're watching something from a century ago or more when we see this opening. There's nothing modern about the way we see this pregnant girl being brought to her father by cowboys.
Until we see cars, I didn't realize it was a modern period film.
Even when I saw those cars, I'm like, they could have cars like way back. They had some form of car, but it's when I saw the plane, I'm like, okay, no, this is modern day.
Exactly. I think that he starts off telling something that feels familiar. It is kind of a cool hook that my daughter is pregnant and I need to find the man that did that and want him dead. $1,000,000 bounty for his head. And that sends all these people, yeah, scattering around the globe in planes, trains, automobiles. Yeah, I guess for $1,000,000, people are willing to do a lot.
There's something I really like about the efficiency and just the simplicity of the setup. Father's daughter gets knocked up. I want the dude's head. That's all, like, I don't know, I wouldn't want to murder someone, but, like, it's an understandable reaction, especially if you're some kind of crime lord that has a lot of money that where you could offer $1,000,000. Like, you're never going to get a whole lot of backstory. Like, who is Alfredo Garcia? Like, why does the dad want his head? Like, I don't care. Like, there's a simplicity about it that instantly just brings me in.
I do think Alfredo Garcia represents something.
Oh, yeah, I got opinions about, like, what these things mean as we get into it. But as far as just the beginning, I'm instantly hooked.
I think what stands out for me is maybe you want to kill the guy that impregnated your daughter. Maybe you would want his severed head as some kind of desk ornament. But to break your own daughter's arm, to strip her naked before her entire family, the shaming that goes on.
It's a grabber. I mean, this opening is really one to bring me into the movie. I couldn't believe the brutality. It tells you, though, you know, it's kind of a stereotypical crime boss who would break his own daughter's arm. And then we find out Alfredo Garcia was like a son to El Jefe, he'll say. So the betrayal is twice as bad. He might not have wanted the head of somebody he didn't know, but the fact that it was Alfredo Garcia, presumably somebody who worked in his organization, if they were that close, then that makes it a fatal offense.
Yes, but just to jump to the end, what are the ironies? And one of the ironies that Sean Ray says he loves about this movie is, in the end, he's going to accept that baby. As mad as he is in this moment, he's going to be actually grateful that he has a grandkid. So his cruelty seems to come from a different space than the fact that she's pregnant.
Yeah, and you see this a lot. Like, you get upset that your kid got knocked up or whatever, but you're still going to love that grandchild. I do have a reading of this film is in Peckinpah often, we talked about in Straw Dogs, their examinations of violence and society, like small acts of violence representing a bigger societal schism and downfall. And to me, this very much feels like the evil that men bring to the world. Like, we're going to see women victimized over and over. This father, I think he accepts that baby because it's a boy. That's my reading. And like the whole machismo thing, there's definitely, yeah, something to men putting this violence out into the world.
And I doubt any of us know. I certainly didn't. The actor playing El Jefe is a director in his own right. He was famed in Mexico and rumored to be a murderer on set and off, that he had killed people in duels. The bonus materials that come along with this film talk about that. He was a really scary dude, that Peckinpah himself called him really evil. So they cast him really well. You buy it. And apparently he is this guy. And as I've already said, Benny is Peckinpah. When we finally have the people searching around, I'm not sure how much time passes, but it's long enough for this woman to have a baby and christen it.
Every once in a while they show a date where you see April 5th and we see June 12th as time passes.
Yeah, I think it's 2 months before they get to Benny.
It feels like a really long time before Benny gets wind of it. And yeah, this is our introduction to our anti-hero, our main protagonist. I don't know how you want to classify or how you feel about Warren Oates in this movie. He's got a real Steve Buscemi vibe to me. I feel like there's something buggy and kind of just gross in, you know, his clothes, all of it. He's just hopeless.
Yeah, I would just call it character. There's a lot of character in that face. Yeah, the way he dresses, he needs a shower, needs to wash that suit, but there's so much personality and character coming off of him. Not someone I would think of as a traditional leading role, but he works in this film.
See, I don't know this actor. And so when we're introduced to Benny playing the piano at a bar, I expect him to be a very minor character. I kind of think we're going to follow the two men in suits, maybe. Or that there would be a lot of various people we're watching racing to get the head. Because if you offer $1 million, a lot of people are going to want that bounty. So it's a surprise to me when I find out he is the main protagonist of this film.
I don't think we have too many movies where, I mean, in the 70s that changed a little, but yeah, he's no matinee idol. Warren Oates had never been the lead before or since. This was his one time to actually be the star of any project. And I do think that's kind of the point in some ways, right? This is a lowly character who is holding out a secret. These men, they seem dangerous. They're American. They're well-dressed. Hookers approach them and they beat them off. They're here for very serious matters.
That's got to be some of that black humor that Sean Ray mentioned, because like, it is so shocking. Like, you see this prostitute like touch the guy's leg or whatever, and he just knocks her out, and that body is just laying there on the ground. Like, I needed to react somehow, and I think I kind of chuckled because it's just so shocking.
I think I gasped because he just elbows her, and I can't imagine the elbowing that is hard enough to concuss someone into unconsciousness. But yeah, that's what he does. And then she just lays there and nobody in the bar does anything for a while. Eventually, they say, carry her out. And a bunch of other women get together to carry her out. But for the rest of the scene, she's just laying on the floor.
I agree. It's brutal and shocking. And yeah, any reaction is valid because you just wouldn't expect it. And here's the thing. Benny knows. Benny knows who Alfredo Garcia is. And says nothing, just plays a little tune, comes off a little bit like Casablanca, you know, trying to be the guy at the bar, the ex-American charmer. I think it has some Bogart qualities later. This is a little film nerd reference, but Sapinsley, one of the dudes, goes by the name Frank C. Dobbs. That is Humphrey Bogart's character name from Treasure of Sierra Madre. So they're making allusions to Bogart and maybe you're picking up on them or not. But this guy he's ugly like Humphrey Bogart, but he does not have the star power. And yes, he is going to let these men leave his bar and then run off to the whorehouse to find out where Alfredo Garcia is, because he is the, reputed to be anyway, the man that his woman was with last week.
You're saying Elita is a prostitute?
Yeah.
You didn't get that.
I didn't get that. I thought that she was just cheating on Benny with Garcia. I mean, they say they spent 3 days and three nights together. I took that as an affair, not as a hired job.
Oh, I think it's really important to recognize that Elita works here. It's a strange bordello, I'll give you that. They got a string section, and she's singing along like it's some kind of Sound of Music moment when we meet her. But she is definitely a working girl, and part of the fantasy for her of running away and why she resents doing anything for money is because turning sex for money is what she does on an average day. She wants to leave this life behind, and Benny is offering that to her.
See, she says she does cleaning. I thought she was like a housekeeper or something. I didn't get that she was a sex worker.
I mean, after Benny hooks up with her, he's like, I think, picking crabs out of his pubes and like pouring alcohol on his dick to clean it. And I'm like, oh, that's because she's a dirty prostitute.
I thought she just got him from Alfredo Garcia.
Later, they will stop into a hotel and the man won't want to rent them a room. And he says, this is for Mr. Benjamin, making the point that the reason why they didn't want them was because they don't rent out by the hour. Benny was trying to say, this is my wife. She's trying to leave that life.
Yeah, I got that. But I just, yeah, the way she talks, I didn't take her. I've said it enough. I didn't take her as a sex worker, and I thought she was with Alfredo Garcia. It really bothered me, Benny's devotion to Elita and how forgiving he was of Elita for being with Alfredo Garcia for so many days, because I took Benny as a sap if she cheated on him. So I guess if it was for money, it's more acceptable?
Well, again, he's a bigger sap. She sleeps with men all the time. But maybe this wasn't a paid job. Again, what we'll find out. One of the interesting decisions that this movie makes is we will actually never see the head of Alfredo Garcia. We have a tiny picture in a locket. But the guy's apparently a Lothario. He's a really good-looking guy, and all the ladies love him. Again, he sort of represents that guy that every woman wants, and it is burning Benny up that, yes, I know you're with hundreds of guys for money, but you ran off for three nights with this guy, and I thought, in my delusion, and I do think this character lives a lot in his head, I'm not sure how much she shares of this vision, but he thought that they were together, monogamous, a couple.
Yeah, I take it that Benny has a very different idea of their relationship than Elita does. Like, she comes and goes when she doesn't have a client. Yeah, she likes his company, she's gonna stay with him, and he has built this as, like, you're my girlfriend, this is a relationship we're in, and she definitely does not return those feelings.
Well, she does, though, because later on, she's going to be excited when he proposes. I think she does have those feelings.
At that moment, but she's not busy being true to him, is what I'm saying.
Yes. I don't believe that she thinks there's a way out. And what she learns here is that he's coming into some money, but she doesn't know why. And it will be for her to find out, of course, over this road trip, that, oh, you want me to cut off the head of my old lover in order for us to have the money to get away and get married. That will turn her off. But I do think, yes, initially, the thought of escape of this life is very, very appealing to both of them. We will see that Benny goes back to these men. They're staying at a swank hotel, and they really got this vibe. There's one guy that looks spitting image like Robert Evans, the head of Paramount Studios. I do believe that they represent, all these guys in suits, the Hollywood slash American thing that Sam Peckinpah wanted nothing to do with at this point. He really was shunning Hollywood productions. He had just made The Getaway, that Steve McQueen hit movie. It's a crime film that he made, and it did okay. I mean, it was a hit for him, but he did not want to play their game. And the idea that, I mean, it is kind of funny that they know this head's worth $1 million, and they're going to try to get it for 1,000. He talks him up to 10,000, but he thinks he's winning.
Yeah, they start at 5.
And they only give him a $200 advance.
Yeah, they're using him. They're exploiting him, as Hollywood producers often do. They give you a pittance and say, yeah, go do your thing. And then we'll find out that the plan is to execute him when he brings the head and pay him nothing. And You know, oftentimes the one of the guys is reading the newspaper with Nixon on it. And I do think that this can be read as a parable about Vietnam. The fact that he is an ex-GI being sent on a mission that is only going to get him killed, a fool's errand that he couldn't possibly win. I think that the metaphors have been read into this film for that reason as well. However you want to take it, Hollywood, Washington, they're bad dudes. I definitely think you get the sense that these guys are not to be played with and that Benny is hopelessly outmatched in this room. He is trying to be cool like them and his suit, his swagger, he's got none of it.
And I think we kind of glossed over, at this point, he knows Alfredo Garcia is dead. He's not giving up that information, but he doesn't have to go and murder a man. I don't know if Benny would. I can't get a read on that character if he would murder a living person for $10,000, but he'll certainly behead a corpse for $10,000.
I'll offer this. He is ex-GI. He's from the military, and he won't talk about that past. There's some lines of dialogue about that on the road, and I take it to mean that he has killed in the past.
Yeah, he for sure alludes to have done killing and maybe even worse things in the war.
Yes, he uses that line, in fact. I've done worse. So I definitely see that as a character that is trying to atone, trying to find his paradise, delusional in believing that, yes, what gets said by Alita, and I don't even know if I believe her, but it ends up being true, that she spent 3 nights with this guy, and then she's heard that he had a drunk driving accident or something, and is buried. And she's not exactly sure where, but yeah, they could go on a road trip and maybe go see. Again, the focus for her, as we get into Act Two, is not Alfredo Garcia at all. She is trying to run away from the life, and it is Benny who keeps bringing up her old lover. Who knows? Maybe Alfredo Garcia threw her away. I mean, I don't get the sense, you know, he has lots of women. Maybe she would have run off and gotten married to him, but that wasn't an option.
And I don't know how far away Alfredo Garcia's grave is. I didn't get the impression that they knew exactly where they were going, but Benny's car does not look fit for any long road trips. I'm not surprised that they're going to have some car trouble.
He hits a bus like day one, and they told him he's got 4 days to return with the head, or they're coming for him.
Notice all the religious parables that are going on here. I mean, just starting with the idea that I think we're in a Catholic mass when the daughter is brought there pregnant, and now 3 days. The martyrdom of Benny, I think, will be seen in contrast to the Jesus story. But yes, he has the same amount of time with Alita that Alfredo Garcia has, and you can see that resentment. Anytime he tries to bring it up, he's mad at her that she chose somebody else. In some ways, you wonder whether he's doing it for the money or he's doing it to prove that her lover is dead and she's his. I definitely see a delusional possessiveness take over Benny as they get going here. But you're right, Arnie. I do believe she gives lots of signals to say, I want to be married to you, or I am happy to be on this road trip with you, that you could interpret it as some kind of love.
Yeah, I mean, she does have dreams. There's this whole conversation how she wants to go back to this town, this old Spanish town she had been to, and Benny, no, I only want to go to new places. It sets up an interesting dynamic between these two, and like, besides the things you could read, like, at least that I read with Benny, like, yeah, being in his head and thinking this relationship is something more than it is. And Alita, I think she knows how to use people to get where she wants to go because she wants to get out of this kind of thing.
Yes. Where it becomes interesting is in the next dramatic scene. We have lots of moments of them, and this movie's pretty slow-paced, but we see them gradually move across this countryside. We know they're being followed by two guys who seem to be working for the Americans, but not totally clear. They're following in a green station wagon, and they're also drinking and driving and looking dangerous. But that's not the danger that they first encounter. They get a flat tire, and we have Kris Kristofferson, of all people, blowing in here for another questionable Sam Peckinpah rape scene. If you recall, Straw Dogs hinges on a rape that may have actually been invited or enjoyed by the female participant. And I do want to ask you guys how you interpret what transpires between Christofferson and Alita.
Because my reading that Alita was a sex worker, I definitely think she sees the danger of what's going on, but she's also resigned to what's going to happen, and she wants to be as nonviolent as possible, and that's why you see her being somewhat like affectionate and putting her hand in his hair and that kind of thing. Like, that's my reading, at least. It's not that she wants it, but this is, a woman that has been worn down by the world that knows how to get through with the least amount of pain.
Yeah, I take it as she's bartering. She's offering sex because they're going to kill Benny. And so if they don't have to rape her, if she is a willing victim as opposed to a resistant victim, then Benny might live. But then it gets weird because she slaps Kris Kristofferson a couple of times, which if she's being willing, I wouldn't see her doing. Then he slaps her and walks away, and she affectionately follows him and kisses him. And so it really was a weird scene for me, and I even wondered, what is the scene doing in this film, except to give something to happen during this road trip?
Well, let me offer this. Maybe she's not so loyal to Benny. Maybe, hey, I like big, strong, tough men, and if Kris Kristofferson wants to throw me on the back of his bike and take me into Convoy or whatever, A Star Is Born, whatever movie he's going to make after this, then, yeah, I think that it's easy to read. Here's what I do believe. Benny believes, when he comes across them, that this is another example of her looking towards an Alfredo Garcia. She's always finding another guy. Later, they're going to stop in a furniture store, and she's going to talk to this guy who's holding some phallic device, and it always looks like flirtation to him. And to the audience in this scene, in this rape scene, it does look like she's coming on to him after Christofferson has pulled away. We are to share Benny's concern about her loyalty, whether or not that is his own paranoia being projected, or whether, in fact, Alita is distrustful. I do think that it's the way that Sam Peckinpah so often characterizes women in his film.
Seems a little misogynistic, but okay.
Yeah, Sam Peckinpah. Of course it's misogynistic.
Yeah, understand. Like, at an awards ceremony, he walked up to one of his actresses and ripped open her blouse and exposed her breast. He's been known to do awful things. There are several actresses who claim they would never work with him again, have terrible things to say about him. He sounds like a brute. Quite honestly, the kind of behavior that would not be allowed, that would be Me Too'd in this decade, is what he was allowed to do in the 60s and 70s, and now has made a movie about it. I do feel like what we are watching is a man who feels deeply insecure about being in love and trusting a woman, because she is someone that is a sex worker, because she does seem to want to make eyes with better-looking men that might take her to more faraway places. What we oftentimes are seeing for the middle of this movie is through his unease. I don't know that we're seeing the truth of the story. We're seeing a man who can't trust women, who deeply believes that they will betray them. And so he's just like this incel Jesus Christ.
Well, and again, I see that with all the men in this, with El Jefe, like, oh, you're my daughter, I own you. How dare you get pregnant without, you know, me sanctioning who did it? Yeah, this is about that men are brutes.
Yeah, and again, that there's always this Alfredo Garcia that the daughter wants to be with, and maybe Alita wants to be with. And this is not a movie about Alfredo Garcia. These are about people that have to go cut off his head. Again, if you really think about it, what Alita is at least mad about is, you don't trust me to be with you, and you want to go and prove that this guy is dead and dig up his corpse and desecrate him and make money off of him having died tragically. She is morally offended, not only about what he would do to the body, but that I think that he can't trust her. That's what I see, is that she's wounded and that he's always suspecting her of having eyes for others.
I agree that that's what I saw, but I wouldn't say he's unjustified in that suspicion, given that she spent those 3 days with Alfredo Garcia.
Yeah, but she's also a sex worker. I don't know what you expect. Like, if you date a sex worker, that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know if she was hired by Alfredo Garcia or was just happy. Again, I almost take it to mean that she was running away with him, just like she's running away with Benny, except he got done with her. And so she had to come back. And she would run off with anyone that could promise her a life of more innocence, where it would be like the past. I get the sense that she feels like a fallen woman that wants to return to a more innocent youth. And any man that could bring that to her, even in Kris Kristofferson, could be that man. She may harbor some love, if that's the word we're using, for that. I don't know why you would love Benny, right? I mean, let's be brutally honest. Why would she be head over heels for Benny?
Yeah, I think she's more in love with the idea of marriage than marriage with Benny.
Yes. And again, you have that scene where they're trying to check into the hotel. They could just look at her and say, oh, you're bringing a prostitute into our hotel. We don't allow that kind of behavior here. That he will fight for her, that he will call her Mrs. Benjamin, I think has her convincing this could be the one. I don't think she's more in love with him than any other guy she's run off with, but she thinks that if they could just forget this whole Alfredo Garcia plan, she doesn't care about the money. She just wants to never go back to the bordello. And if Benny could do that, again, he'll end up realizing the money wasn't worth it. $5,000, $10,000, $1 million, it isn't worth it. But he can't see that in the middle of this movie. He's, I think, in love with the idea of knowing the man she loves is dead. He wants that is confirmed as much as El Jefe does. They both want to see the head of Alfredo Garcia because they both want to believe that that man won't hold power over their women.
Yeah, it's telling when they get in this fight and Benny says, Alfredo Garcia, he loved you. And Alita's response is, but I love you now. Like, I do feel she's got this survivor mentality. Like, she will do whatever she needs to do to get out of her situation. And Benny's the one that's given her that best option at this point.
And I don't think it makes it disingenuous. I mean, I think she loves the idea of getting away with a man that's devoted to her. And she could make this work. Again, I see her as somewhat accepting. But yes, the pain is that you could get other men, better looking men, and I will never be Alfredo Garcia. I mean, I think that's a lot of where the resentment and the tension between them comes in the middle of this movie. One thing that gets pointed out a lot is that this is a movie that shows you the Mexico you don't see in the tourist brochures, that they really went to real locations. Nothing here is a set. Apparently, they're places that Sam Peckinpah liked to drink and stay at, like this hotel that's really just a barn.
I do not want to stay at this hotel.
Yeah, yeah. The urinal is just right there. You can watch a guy pee while yes. You check in. This is a place he would stay in.
I mean, when your career crashes, I guess those are your options.
I think he liked it. I think it's beyond that. I mean, again, I think, I don't know, he was kind of crazy. People talk about he was drunk all the time on set, would disappear, had doctors hooking him up to strange IVs all the time. And again, the screenwriter of this says, I love the man, but I'm never working with him again. Other people, like Peter Falk, didn't come to this set to do the movie, and other people begged out. Some of these roles were meant to be played by other people who walked away and they had to refilm. But I do see this is about a man spiraling out of control. And whether you want to experience that or not, I cannot say. But I feel like the movie is capturing the ickiness of the addiction and the paranoia very well. The surprise of this movie is, I would have thought there would have been a lot of violence and splatter and that this road trip would be nonstop adventure. And what I'm really seeing more and more is a relationship drama, and one that is, again, on the cusp of becoming legitimate, but can never be. I put more on Benny. I don't know. Do you guys have, maybe they share equally in the idea of why they don't end up happily ever after, but I put it on Benny's obsession with getting the head.
Yeah, I'm definitely paying more attention to Benny because he's the protagonist, so that's where I'm drawn to really follow him, but I'm, yeah, reading things into Alita, but yes, it's a obsession to get that head. I feel like it's a way to one-up Alita's former lover, it's a way to get money and to get her to love him more. So much hinges on that I'm always thinking about Benny.
Yeah, and I'm also focused on Benny. It feels like Benny's the one literally in the driver's seat, as well as figuratively in the driver's seat. It's an age-old conundrum for love or money, and here he is. theoretically falling in love with Alita or in love with Alita, offering to marry her no matter what, and yet he's also driven by the money and the idea of the fantasy of what life they could have if he gets this $10,000. And honestly, it becomes a lot for me. This goes on for an hour. It takes them an hour to get to the head of Alfredo Garcia, and I feel they hit the same note a bit too often in that hour.
Yeah, I think I'm enjoying this film. I'm taken in by the performances and just kind of the brutality when we do get those moments of violence. But yeah, a lot of talk about marriage, and I definitely feel like there are pacing issues, or maybe this is the pace Peckinpah wanted, this weird road trip type neo-Western or something. But it definitely does have lulls. I'm not going to say it's the best paced film ever.
Yeah, enjoy is a weird word. I can't say I'm enjoying what I'm watching. I can say that I feel gross watching this movie. The environments they're in, the behavior I'm seeing, the fact that they're going to chop off a head and then carry it around. There's actually nothing in this movie that isn't gross. That the love scene ends with him picking out some kind of lice out of his crotch and squishing it and pouring a bottle of tequila on his pelvis, hoping that will kill the rest of it. Again, I think that's the intent. I think the intent is less, you tell me, madcap comedy. I don't laugh out loud too much during this, but there is a lot of irony and a lot of pain, and I'm connecting to the fact that there's some truth to all of this. And some of that is, of course, that I know the biographical stuff about Sam Peckinpah to know that there is truth here. But entertainment, it is not. Now, it does become a revenge movie once we hit that hour mark and get the twist that we do.
And by enjoy, I mean, I'm intrigued. I'm into this film. These are complex characters that have contradictory emotions and thoughts. And so it's piqued my interest. And to me, that means I'm enjoying a film if I'm interested. Yes, it's a gross, sweaty, dirty film as well. But despite some of its pacing issues, I want to know where it's going.
And Stuart, you say there's comedy in here. I'm not laughing. I'm mostly just kind of repulsed by this movie and what it's giving me. And maybe that's exactly what they're going for. But also, with the pacing problems that I mentioned and that Jacob agreed with, it's leading to, like, wallowing in pig shit is kind of my feeling while I'm watching this movie, and I'm not liking that feeling.
Yeah, I agree. Entertainment, you'd be concerned about the pacing and picking it up and all of that. And art is about doing what the artist says, and the artist wants to wallow. It is very clear this is a feel-bad movie. I don't know how you could not. Whether or not you find them intriguing, I cannot say, but I do think, yeah, just gross. For the most part, there should be some element of you, hopefully. There's a healthy part of you that wants to be free of both of them and take a shower.
I want to be free of the movie. Does that count?
Well, I mean, it can, but I mean, what I would offer is not every movie is entertainment. And so that you are grossed out about misogynistic behavior and terrible things feels right. Can it be redeemed? If they're going to gloss all of this over in Jesus Christ parables, I think what's interesting to ask is, once the movie takes its hard turn, and we could probably have predicted that these two weren't going to find their happy ending, but I don't think we are to know that when he digs up the grave of Alfredo Garcia and gets conked on the head, he will be waking up next to Alita's body.
That's a hell of a jump scene there, that edit. Yeah, he's all kind of partially buried in Alita's underneath them. And at first, is she knocked out? Is she unconscious or is she dead? And like, Benny is just so callous. I'm like, oh, I guess she's just dead. And this is how Benny's going to deal with those emotions, not deal with them. He's just going to leave.
Well, you know, it's a 4-minute scene. I want to just underline the fact that it is quite a performance to see him wake up, reach for the hand, see that it's her. Think that, yeah, she might be injured, but she's like me. She'll wake up. We got to get out of here. And then slowly come around to the idea. I mean, where he lands on this, and again, this gets to the whole suspicious minds that has been his undoing from the get-go. Well, if you want to stay here with him then you do that. Again, he sees this as her picking a side, her picking the other guy. She'd rather be with dead Alfredo Garcia than to go off into their planned happily ever after. And he's mad at her. I think that that's this expression that he has when he's walking out of this graveyard after these 4 minutes. Again, tells you so much about his psyche. But it is a very different movie for the next 40 minutes. I do think it becomes, you know, we've covered some Crow movies recently. We've covered Death Wish, which came out the same year as this. I do think that if I were a film marketer trying to sell the American public on why they should watch this movie, you would emphasize these last 40 minutes about getting revenge.
Yeah, it's a definitely different kind of movie during this. And I'm a little confused about Benny's motivations for some of it, because obviously he wants revenge against the two goons in the station wagon for killing Elita. But he also wants Alfredo Garcia's head. He's not just going for that revenge against those who wronged him personally. And I think he's still going for the money. Like, if I had to lose Elita, at least I can still get what I think is the $10,000.
That is, I think, the open-ended question that he speaks out of both sides of his mouth. Sometimes he's like, it wasn't worth it. I mean, what's interesting is when he finally gets the head, jumping ahead a little bit, it will become a friend to him. He will talk to Alfredo Garcia about his problems. And yes, sometimes he's saying things like, it wasn't worth it. I should not have gone for this money. But yes, he's never giving up. Part of his quest is taking that head back to the men that are going to give him $10,000.
And how gross is that head? Covered in flies, filling the car with flies. You got to assume it's stinking because the corpse has been dead for a while, so it's not like the head was fresh when he dug it up. And yeah, he's stopping at a restaurant, getting some ice to put in there. So now you've got soggy, rotting flesh in a bag. It is such a disgusting image.
Yeah, I'm so worried. Like, that head's going to be so deformed, they're not going to know if it's Alfredo Garcia or not when they finally look.
And we don't see it. Again, that was, I mean, I so want to look at it. Even when he opens the casket, after he digs it up, we cut to a close-up of Benny's head. We do not see Alfredo Garcia, and it's, again, imagining in our minds.
We see the head, but it's covered in a cloth. There's a white cloth over Alfredo Garcia's face for whatever reason. Maybe that's a Mexican burial tradition.
Yeah. It drives me crazy because, again, everything has been about this head. You so want to look upon it. Will it be recognizable? Will he get money for it? Who was this man that was so important that caused all of this to befall all these characters? It's interesting to me that Benny calls the head his friend by the end of this road trip. On the way back, he stops in all the places that he and Alita stopped in. You know, they went to this town where when Alita was there, it was a fiesta. And now, like, the church bells are clanging and there's a more gross feeling to it all. And he's had to kill the two goons. He did catch up to the green station wagon. But now he's got to deal with the Garcias themselves. They're pissed that the gravesite was vandalized. And this is where they're going to make their stand.
Yeah, I love this whole family comes together, even the old grandma to sabotage him.
And they're all going to get gunned down. I think someone's holding a baby, right? I mean, like the whole...
Yeah, I don't think anyone was holding a baby in that scene. There was the grandma, and she didn't have a gun. But the rest of the Garcias all had guns trained on Benny.
There's one old man that gets to walk away.
Yes, I suppose that's true. But that's a common theme. I do feel like vigilante movies typically try to put out the idea that it's wrong. That you don't get what you think you'll get when you go down that path.
But this is a comedic scene. Like, everyone's there, guns out, and like a tourist bus drives up. And they got to pull the cars out of the way and all wave. And like, you can tell what's going on. Everyone's holding guns, but we're just going to drive by and wait for that bus to be out of the shot and then shoot everyone.
This is where the comedy is coming in. I feel like that first hour, very light on the laughs. But yes, now that we've had this head that is sometimes singing Alita's voice, but covered in flies. And yes, the gunmen are waving to the American tourists while holding their rifles. I am finding a release. And maybe that's the point. You've had this long hour buildup. We're finally grateful to be able to put all of that anxiety somewhere. And laughter is a good release.
I agree. I'm finding some of this amusing, not laughing out loud, but finding it amusing and ironic and wry.
So Pinsley and Quill come back. We knew, right, that they were going to kill them. Like, it was pretty evident that, again, they were shortchanging him. And yeah, it's pretty clear here. They're going to help him get out of this jam, but only so that they can get the head for themselves.
Yeah, I think it's Quill who has like a Tommy gun, but the way he gets out of the car with that coat drenched over his shoulder, I'm like, he's hiding a gun. He's going to start shooting. But then Benny's going to take them out. After they kill all the Garcias, Benny takes them.
He only has to take out Sappinsley, right? Because Quill was gunned down by the Garcias.
Yes, there was that one that was hiding up on the hill that got him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what to make of it. I know that there's so much misogyny. It wouldn't surprise me if the homophobia is here, too. But I think we are to read with the earlier scene of the way they punched away the women and the way that they're together in this. I think we're to see them as gay lovers, that their gayness is a part of what makes them villainous. Is at least the read that I'm getting off of here. We are to be cheering that Benny takes them out. And takes the head on a plane. Wouldn't you love to have seen that?
It's a dead cat!
Maybe you tell the TSA that. They didn't have TSA back then.
You just walk onto a plane back in those days.
Oh my god. Even with a head of flies and maggots.
Yeah, packed in dry ice that he got, I guess, before the last hotel stay. That hotel stay is another just kind of gross scene of Benny looking at the shower, but definitely not spending enough time in the shower.
Yeah, well, again, that earlier that she was in the shower and it was kind of a tender scene. They started to kiss. That was actually a moment when she was in the shower where I actually felt like she could love him because he had stood up for her, because it didn't bother her that she was this prostitute. Yeah, what was a sweet scene on the way there now becomes this ridiculously morbid scene of her, the head of her lover in a basket full of dry ice smoking, and yeah, him hearing the singing of his dead lover.
But after the flight, he does go back to that hotel room where he was offered the $10,000, and the other two men are there, so obviously Sappinsley and Quill are dead.
Yeah, the one I call Robert Evans, he just so much looks like the guy that greenlit Godfather, among many classic Paramount films of the time. But yeah, there, again, they tell this guy, take the money and be glad for it. I see Benny really wanting existential answers to, like, why did I do this? What is the worth of this? What has been transpired by me bringing you this head? He wants answers that they're not willing to give him. Take your $10,000 and get out of here.
Yeah, he gets upset because they won't even, like, confirm that it's the right head. They're like, yeah, here's your money, just leave. It just sets him off. Yeah, rewant answers, like, why is this Alfredo Garcia so important? But there are no answers to be had.
This leads to a shootout. You mentioned what you'd put in the trailer, Stuart. The scene here where one of the money men is shooting at Benny in a mirror, and then Benny steps out and shoots him, that was featured in the trailer. I did watch the trailer before I watched this movie. And it did lead me to think I was going to be watching a far more action-packed film than what was delivered.
That's what trailers do.
Again, the title like that, and yeah, the trailer like that, it would be how you would sell the film. But I don't think you could have cut this movie down to have it be that film. Honestly, you might as well just let it be the way Sam chose to make it, because cutting 20 minutes out of the beginning, I'm not sure that it would satisfy the action fan. I don't see that it's their movie.
It's not. I can speak to that. It is not.
No, it definitely isn't. And what was it all worth? Again, that final irony of coming to El Jefe and seeing that he barely cares. That, oh, I got my grandson now. That everything is actually about entertaining all the children. They're throwing coins at them. And again, it's whatever the anger was, it seems to have subsided because the guy, you're right, it is a male child. And it's something that El Jefe claims for himself. And the daughter, yeah, she doesn't get Alfredo Garcia. And I think that's why she's okay with Benny gunning down her dad.
Don't break your daughter's arm. That's the lesson here.
Well, she doesn't know Alfredo Garcia died in a car accident either. She could still very well think Alfredo Garcia is dead because her father ordered it and want revenge for her dead lover.
But again, a callous turn. The father treating her so bad in the first scene, and her sanctioning his assassination here.
I'm still wondering about Benny's motivation. I understood avenging Alita with the men in the station wagon and maybe even Sappensley and Quill, but his bloodlust at this point, maybe I'm too Machiavellian, but I would think $1 million buys a lot of prostitutes.
No, this is all about Alita. Like, this is, yeah, it doesn't matter the money or the head. Like, he has lost his lover. It's nihilistic. Just shoot everyone, kill everyone, nothing matters.
He has nowhere to go. Yes, that's right. What is he going to do with that money? You say more hookers. He called it his last chance. Understand that that road trip was a last chance, and he was talking about love. He was talking about a future far away from the depravity that he had been living for so long. So I don't even know if it's about Alita.
What she symbolized.
Yes. A life with her could be something I haven't had. He has a line somewhere in the movie. He says something to the effect of, I've never been in a place that I'd want to go back to. And I think that's exactly it, is that he is dreaming of a place he's never been, imagining a paradise that probably doesn't exist. And by this point, now that he's gunned down all these men, the money does him no good. There's nowhere to go with it. That's the fatalism you have to sort of buy into to buy this ending.
But of course, he's going to be gunned down in revenge for killing El Jefe.
With an extreme close-up on the rifle barrel, almost like it's blowing away the audience. Again, the contempt that I feel like Peckinpah had for Hollywood, the audience, everyone, maybe, by this point. It feels like a big F you. This entire movie has been that, to go out in this way. It's definitely within the same spirit.
So Jacob, Stewart, do you recommend Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia? Jacob.
Besides a few pacing issues in that first hour, it can get a little long at times. I do think there's a lot of interesting stuff in this film. It is a brutal, dirty, ugly, gross, misogynistic. I could just keep doing adjectives to describe how unappealing this movie is, but it is in the way it characterizes, especially Benny. Like, I find him a fascinating character with contradictions, where Alita, is it about the love for Alita, or does she just represent some ideal he has and maybe she doesn't even matter? There's, you know, we brought up No Country for Old Men, and another film that came out that year, which is kind of Western adjacent, was There Will Be Blood, which is both films about awful, ugly men, lots of sweat and covered in oil and gross that goes with, I don't know, there's something about that appeals to me. I think Peckinpah is good at examining violence in society. We talked about Straw Dogs. That's a much better version of exploring that, but I don't know all about his history, his personality, how this might line up with that. But as a film about, yes, just brutality, like going to war, what are we going to war for? To get the head of Alfredo Garcia? What does that mean? Who knows? Like, that is how war and violence often is in society. So I think there are definitely interesting themes to explore in this film, and that intrigued me and kept my interest even when maybe all that marriage talk went on a little bit too long. So yeah, it's an unappealing film that's gross, dirty, ugly, violent, nasty, but I definitely think there is something to it, something to get out of this. So I'm going to give this, yeah, a pretty solid recommend.
Stuart.
Yeah, it's a tough film and a tough call, because I do want to stress what I think we're all saying. There's not much traditional entertainment value to bringing this head into your life. Any anticipation for campy violence, for intense action, few and far between. If you've come for the thrills, you will be disappointed. You'll be disappointed anyway. This is a portrait of despair. This is an unhappy filmmaker wallowing in his excesses, alcoholic, misogynistic, contempt for Hollywood, angry about the Vietnam War. Perhaps you read that in here. Again, you mentioned this as violence in a war film. America was really grappling in 1974 as Nixon is leaving the White House. We'd leave Vietnam the next year. I think those sentiments were stronger. I mean, I think that this comes from a place of genuine pain. Whereas I call things designer grunge, people just being edgy because they think it looks cool. I genuinely believe that this filmmaker is in a lot of pain and isn't expressing it. And whether you want to experience that or not is your call, because it is not entertainment. It is art. And you come to it. It will not come to you. Why would I come to it? Warren Oates. In the end, what makes me stay with the film is I honestly really like the way he is able to embody this prickly character. The incel Jesus Christ who projects all these horrible things on the women he loves and then spends the rest of the movie crying to the head of her lover is just such a bizarre notion of a one-sided romance. But I feel it. I mean, I honestly, genuinely have empathy and compassion because of the way Warren Oates plays it. I mean, I just think in other hands, I think I would find this movie entirely repellent. I would run screaming from it. It is only because I buy the love story, such as it is, one-sided as it might be, and I really care about our central character. I don't think you can go there if you don't. If you don't find him a compelling, contradictory, extremely flawed anti-hero, then this is just torture, a severed head that you would want to pitch into the nearest bucket of dry ice. But I'm going to say mild recommend. It's a tough call because I recognize the unpleasantness. Usually people don't want unpleasantness when they're watching something for entertainment value.
I guess that says something about me then.
Well, it does. I mean, I think you have to wear the hat of, I want to understand a person. I want to process their pain. If you don't want to touch pain, don't touch this film. But if you are interested in looking at a hard examination of a hard time in a filmmaker's life, in America's time in history, I think there are some real undeniable truths to this story that make it compelling. So that's a mild recommend.
I didn't have the benefit of knowledge of Peckinpah's biographical history, nor was I able to provide such a literary deconstruction of the film to see it metaphorically. I saw the film for what it was offering on a surface level, on a plot level, and on a character level, not what the filmmaker might be making allegories to. And I did see what you talk about with Benny being a conflicted character, being morally ambiguous, and being a dichotomy of a man. The talking to the decomposing head really drives that home. You gotta have someone to talk to on a road trip. He had a woman to talk to on the way there and a head to talk to on the way back.
This is what people did without cell phones, I guess. Who can remember the time?
Yeah, before audiobooks, too. So, I got that, but for me, A, as I mentioned, I was disgusted by the misogyny of the film.
You should be.
I think that's the right instinct. Don't enjoy that, because that's not good.
And I found the character of Benny not one I could really enjoy watching. I thought him foolish and I judged him a lot. And I really think, though, the reason I'm coming down the way I am is the pacing of this film. I feel like the first hour is way too languid. The biker attack, disgusting and strange. And then even the last 40 minutes is, even though that's where all the shooting happens, it doesn't ever come across as exciting, except for the one shot of shooting the mirror. That shooting the mirror shot's very cool, and the rest of it is kind of dry. This is a weak not recommend for me. I understood what the film was offering, and it's not that I didn't want what the film was offering. It's not just that I felt disgusted by the film and felt like I was wallowing in pig shit. Because, yeah, not all films are there to adrenalize you. Not all films are there to make you smile. But it was just that this film left me bored. And that is a fatal flaw of a film. If I'm not interested in what's happening on the screen, that's a not recommend. But I appreciate some of the things that it did. So it's a weaker not recommend.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting counterpart to Straw Dogs, which is a film I like so much more. It has a lot of the same kind of ironies. It has a same kind of ambiguity around a rape, but there's tension. One thing I just respond to that movie is I'm grabbing my armrest. I'm feeling adrenalized and scared watching the thieves break into the house in the climax of this film. I don't have that same intensity at all. I mean, I think bored is an understandable because you're dissociated. I don't feel like I'm there with the characters experiencing the gunfights. It's just not going to have the impact of a suspense movie or an action movie at any point, even in the more action-oriented, suspense-oriented portions. But that is it for Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. Next month, one day from now, July, we are going to be in a new month. We're going to celebrate another 50th anniversary of another kind of dark and grim story as well. And another movie that I'm going to go ahead and just spoil, I recommend.
And another Sean Ray pick.
Oh, good point. I didn't realize, but makes sense. Dog Day Afternoon, one of Al Pacino's finest performances, maybe even better than The Godfather. I guess we'll have that discussion.
That's an interesting one with the topic and the time it came out. Like, even today, that would probably turn some heads.
Yeah, it's a true story. We'll be watching it almost on the anniversary.
So thank you to Sean Ray for picking this movie. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you to all of our patrons listening. And we hope you do join us next month for Dog Day Afternoon. Honestly, it's a film probably more people have heard of than Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
Yeah, it made more money for sure.
So thank you all. Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me. So until next time, goodbye, my brothers from Ohio. Goodbye, my brothers from Illinois. Take your wooden hearts out and find the soul in Mexico.
I know about graves. What's done is done. Right, Spinito? Kill people. Worse, a lot worse. But I'm going to keep him. I'm not giving him back. I didn't do it, but I would have. That's just the way it goes.
Thank you for your support of Now Playing.
Do this for dinero, you do this for money, eh?
No.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating and putting out new shows without missing a single episode in over 300 weeks.
You don't mess around, do you? Right down to business.
And a special thank you to Sean Ray for his support of our show and for picking Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia for our hosts to review.
Why? Because it feels so goddamn good.
Help us spread the word about this show by leaving a 5-star review on Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, or your podcast store of choice.
I don't know what to say. Damn it to hell, I don't know what to say.
Need more Now Playing? Subscribe to our In Focus weekly newsletter for exclusive digital download giveaways, behind-the-scenes insights, and more. Sign up through the subscribe page on our website and get it delivered to your inbox every Friday.
I got a chance, a ticket, and we're not going to miss it.
You can also compare notes with us on Letterboxd. Go to letterboxd.com/nowplaying to see what our hosts are watching when we're not recording podcasts. And follow Now Playing on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our YouTube channel.
I mean, there are other things like I'd like to stay alive.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
Bravo, bravo.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
This house, we know nothing.
Now Playing is edited by Santiago and Arnie.
You guys are definitely on my shit list.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
We're well aware of the problem, and we're prepared to settle for his head.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
You're a lying, cheating, no-good, two-bit bitch.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
Alfredo's been trying to beat this rap all his life. So have I, so have you.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
No shit. Arbiter.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2024, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
It wasn't worth it, baby. It wasn't worth it.
Teenaged Teresa is pregnant.
Teresa?
Yeah, that's her name.
How'd you get that?
Wikipedia.
Must have been in the script. I don't think I ever heard it.
If you say so.
Yeah.
Teenaged Teresa is pregnant.